Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. This is going to be an extraordinary program, I think, because we're going to talk to someone who is going to introduce me, and I think many of you, to a part of what's going on in this war, this effort to defend Western civilization that most of us are, if not completely oblivious to, certainly don't understand, as does our guest for this full hour of conversation. She is Elizabeth Foran-Yore. That last name is spelled Y-O-R-E. She has served in a number of very interesting capacities over the years that have brought her, I think, a national reputation as a champion of and advocate for children and the plight that many of them, altogether too many of them, are subjected to, not just elsewhere around the world, but here in this country as well. She has been professionally involved in the field, both as the general counsel of the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services, and more recently as a special counsel to Oprah Winfrey, in association with her organization Harpo Productions, where she served not only as a legal child advocate and child production expert for Oprah Winfrey, but also worked with her on all aspects of child protection-related programming for the Oprah Winfrey Show. I've had the privilege of meeting her for the first time just recently and thought it would be most extraordinary to visit with her about some of her experiences and how they bear on some of the acute problems we're confronting as a Western civilization, as the free world. And for that purpose, I'm very pleased to say to Elizabeth Yore, welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. It's so good to have you.
Thank you, Frank. Delighted to be with you today.
So let me start the conversation, Elizabeth, by stipulating to a couple of things. You are an expert in these matters. You've devoted much of your professional life to them. You're also a Roman Catholic faith tradition, which has given you a certain insight into not just how civil society deals with these problems, but also ecclesiastical. So talk a little bit about these experiences, how you got into child protection, and some of the most important insights of where you think things stand at the moment with regard to this very important topic.
Well, when I graduated from law school, Frank, I had no idea what I wanted to do. But being the oldest of six children, I should have guessed that I would have gone into child advocacy because I was always telling my siblings what to do. And so it was a natural fit for me. And I think I have some of the greatest jobs there are in existence in child advocacy, working not only at Illinois Department of Children and Family Services on a whole range of child advocacy issues, the whole child welfare system of abused and neglected children. I also was general counsel at the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. So I did international child abduction cases, missing children cases, and then I went to work for Oprah Winfrey as her child advocate, worked a great deal on her child abuse scandal in her South Africa school, the Leadership School for Girls. And so I got to see, in a very unusual way, international law at work on these issues. And my whole career really has been looking for children. You know, they used to say it's like looking for a needle in a haystack. And, of course, being the oldest of six, I loved challenges. And so I really did use all my skills in legal advocacy to advocate on behalf of children, to make policies that were better for children, and to, in many cases, find children that had been abducted either by strangers or parents around the world. And, you know, this work is a devilish kind of work because you're dealing often with the dark, dark side of human nature. I actually did investigate clergy abuse cases. So as a Roman Catholic, you're confronted with this evil that has, in fact, infested the church. As we know, many great organizations like Boy Scout schools, predators go where they have access to children. So it's been a fascinating career, and one which has, you know, brought me to see the whole world, as a matter of fact. And now we're dealing with this issue of human trafficking that seems to have grabbed the attention of the public.
Indeed. Let me just cite a couple of your other rather impressive credentials, Elizabeth Yor. You were a U.S. delegate to the Hague Convention on Civil Aspects of Child Abduction, which gave rise to a convention on that subject, and chaired the International Subcommittee of the U.S. Attorney General Task Force, Federal Task Force on Missing and Exploited Children. You've been awarded a Medal of Merit by the Department of State for your outstanding work on the Hague Convention on Child Abduction, and have been involved, among other things, with the Vatican in efforts to sort of pursue the obligations, international obligations now, under that convention. So this is an extraordinarily rich sort of base of experience and professional credentials that I think speaks to the magnitude of the problem. And I guess that's what I'd like to just visit a little bit further with you about, then we'll get into some of the specifics. I happened over the past 24 hours to watch a really remarkable film called Lion, which I'm sure you're familiar with, about a child in India and his experiences as a first missing child, and then the things that befell him or almost befell him as a result. It can't help but touch you at a very primal level, especially if you've been privileged as I've been to be a parent and to see the vulnerability of children, even ones that are healthy and loved and cared for. Give us just, if you can, the orders of magnitude on which this problem of missing children, abducted children, abused children is really so, as you say, part of the human condition these days. And why is it trafficking in them is now seizing the public's attention, do you think?
The reason is money follows the crime. And this is a crime that is highly lucrative. As you know, Frank, when you traffic in drugs or guns, your experience with law enforcement and in your previous career, once you sell a gun, it's sold. Once you sell drugs, they're sold. They're gone. But a child can be sold repeatedly and repeatedly. ISIS, as a matter of fact, has recognized that human trafficking has become a source of tremendous income for ISIS, for terrorists, for Boko Haram. We saw that in Nigeria. In the United States, there are 400,000 missing and endangered children. Many of these children are on the run from foster care. Many teens, young teens who take off. And in doing human trafficking cases when I was at the Department of Children and Family Services, in fact, we had that first prosecution with the U.S. Attorney's Office, the victims were two girls who had gone on the run from a group home. And within 20 minutes, they were picked up by traffickers. And, you know, to me, that was shocking. And these traffickers were making $200,000 a year off these girls. They were the traffickers were living in mansions. The girls were in hovel hotels, barely eating, barely getting enough food for sustenance. We don't know the magnitude of this covert crime because it's so hidden, because they're always on the move. But we do know that it is growing, certainly with immigration across the border. Traffickers are bringing in unaccompanied minors. we're going to continue to see more and more trafficking in the United States. And the reason I believe that trafficking has become such a phenomenon around the world is the ease of air travel and the borderless world. You can
this
cross
is this
into
is what
Europe.
I want to talk with you about next. And our guest again is Elizabeth Yore. She is an attorney by training and a woman with great skill in defense of children. And we're going to talk about the borderless world and what it means in so many respects, not least for children, with her right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back for the second installment of our very special conversation with Elizabeth Yore, one of the nation's preeminent champions of children and the effort to protect them against trafficking and other types of abuse. Elizabeth Yore is, you can follow her at yorechildren.com. That is Y-O-R-E, children.com. And, of course, we'll be talking with her throughout this hour about some of her experiences and insights. And I wanted to pick up on the one that you just mentioned before the break, Elizabeth, and that is the contribution that the sort of borderless world that seems to be emerging, or at least has of late been present, is having in the way of a contribution, a contributing effect to this phenomenon of children being trafficked.
Yeah, it's been a dramatic effect. Ever since the EU, and we have seen just a huge increase in human trafficking, people crossing from Eastern Europe into Western Europe, and people from Asia, women primarily being trafficked all around Asia. One of the interesting things is because of sex selection abortion, which is, you know, so rampant in India and China, and as a result, you know, female children are aborted, there is, you know, recognition in China that there are 35 million missing women. Well, you can imagine the demographic impact of not having 35 million women to marry, to court, to date in China. And as a result, they're seeing a huge infusion of trafficking into China because of the sex selection abortion phenomenon in the one-child China policy. In the borderless
world, we also often talk about this in connection with national security as well, as to the pent-up unsated desires of those military-age men who will find no women available to them unless they're provided through these kinds of practices or perhaps through conquest overseas. Our guest is Elizabeth Yore, an experienced attorney who has served in a number of capacities trying to protect children. You have been involved, as I've said, Elizabeth, in international efforts to protect them, notably the Hague Convention aimed at preventing human trafficking. Talk a little bit about how the Roman Catholic Church has been involved, your own experience with the church, in fact, being an advocate for children. What has the Vatican, particularly under the present pope, been doing in this regard?
Well, full disclosure, I was thrilled with our new pope, Pope Francis, who began speaking almost immediately about his interest in human trafficking. And so I was thrilled to see that, to see having the large platform of the papacy to address this issue and hopefully bringing in some real solutions. So I attended the November 2013 Human Trafficking Conference at the Vatican, expecting to hear all sorts of positive experts' ideas germinating from the church. Well, a funny thing happened on my way to Rome. Mm. When I arrived at the Vatican, I thought I had taken a wrong turn, a very left turn, because I walked into the Vatican, Frank, the chair of Peter, and it was not the chair of Peter. It was not the Holy See, but I felt like I was in enemy territory. There was officials from the Obama administration, the UN administration, radical NGOs, and they were not pushing the realities of human trafficking. Rather, I was hearing more talk about climate change, pushing migration, and that sex trafficking and human trafficking were closely connected to climate change. Well, I almost fell off my chair. Climate change? What does climate change have to do with human trafficking? In none of the cases that I had, you know, it's the result of, you know, evil men, evil organizations, exploitation of women and children. It certainly is not because of the change in temperature. So I was, frankly, after that three-day conference, rattled, because I could not understand what was going on. And it was, to me, this talk of human trafficking as the result of climate change was, to me, a big red flag. And when I left that conference, I was determined to find out and investigate what was going on. And, you know, I spent my whole legal career looking for missing children, so I was certain that I could get to the bottom of what was going on, this hard left drift that I saw with my own two eyes and witnessed that was going on at the Vatican. And the more I dug, the more shocking revelations I uncovered.
Now, you started this conversation by talking about following the money, and of course, that's precisely what you did. And by the way, folks, in addition to yourchildren.com, yorechildren.com, you can follow some of Elizabeth's rather remarkable investigative reporting, really, at The Remnant, including a piece that you've written very recently about the involvement of the purveyor of some of these funds in this radical left turn by the church and others. Tie all these pieces together, if you would, Elizabeth.
Sure. Well, Frank, what I found was that George Soros, the Prince of Darkness, you know George Soros, we all know George Soros, the leftist atheist who has funded radical organizations around the world, had embedded his closest collaborators, in fact, his brain trust, who had been with him for many, many years, two particular men, Jeffrey Sachs and Joseph Stiglitz. Jeff Sachs is an economist from Columbia, as is Joe Stiglitz. Stiglitz is also the founder of Socialist International. Both men funded by George Soros, and that the Vatican was actively carrying out and implementing the Soros UN climate change agenda with the full consent and participation of Pope Francis.
So let me clarify this, because when you talk about the various elements of this agenda, I think it's implicit in what you're saying, but would you address it explicitly? Is that agenda antithetical in important ways to Western freedoms and civilization as we've known them?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, the climate change agenda of the UN is promulgated on the anti-Catholic thesis that the population is too extensive, too many people in the world. The population must be reduced in order to reduce the carbon footprint. So the whole sustainable development agenda of the UN, and frankly, George Soros, has been to impose population control on the world. But in order to impose population control, you can only have, we saw the chaos that occurred in one child, China. You have to find an excuse that too many people are causing damage to the environment. and the manufactured example is climate change. You know, in the old days, it was...
Hold on to this thought, if you would. We have to pause for just a second. We'll be right back with more with Elizabeth Yore upon this issue of what is being done in the name of climate change that actually has implications for not just children, but for all of us. That and more with Elizabeth Yore. Straight ahead.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back for an hour-long conversation with Elizabeth Yore, one of the champions of children in the world these days, many of whom are being abused, gone missing, being trafficked, sold into slavery, and what have you. She comes to this via a number of experiences, both with government agencies and with Oprah Winfrey. You've been talking about pieces of this, and I'd like to invite you to sort of, again, stitch several of them together. George Soros's funding, Barack Obama's political agenda, Pope Francis coming together in a sort of unholy alliance, if I can use that expression, to promote a social engineering agenda under the guise of climate change, when even the conference is supposedly about child trafficking. So what else is the church up to under these influences that is also concerning?
Well, one of George Soros's main issues was climate change. You can check that off the list, because thanks to Pope Francis, George Soros was able to deliver a papal encyclical on climate change, was able to deliver the UN agenda on climate change and the Paris Treaty. So number one is struck off the list. The next issue, very near and dear to George Soros's heart, which WikiLeaks and DC Leaks also talks about, this collaboration between the left in the United States and the Vatican. We know that the next issue, very near and dear, which is going to be pushed and is now being pushed not only by the Pope, Frank, but also by the 1,800 parishes throughout the Catholic parishes throughout the United States, and that is refugee resettlement. In fact, Pope Francis says hospitality to refugees is our greatest security against terrorism. We have a number of bishops in the United States who are insisting that welcoming refugees keeps us safe. Discrimination against Muslims is unconscionable. And in fact, my own cardinal, Cardinal Supacher in Chicago, said that Trump's refugee ban, we know it's now, is a dark moment in U.S. history. So the message has gone out. Now we're going on to number two on the Soros agenda, which is the mass migration of refugees, which, if you've read anything about George Soros, you know that that has been his main objective in Western Europe. And he has succeeded dramatically in Western Europe.
Let's talk a little bit about that, Elizabeth, because I think it's so important to really understand that this isn't some sort of abstract nostrum or notion. This is something that is being practiced now. And for those who are uneasy about this idea, the Pope's notion or claim that the greatest protection against terrorism is to admit refugees, this really does raise this question about, are there lessons for us to be learned from what we're witnessing taking place in Europe at the moment? So talk a little bit about, from the vantage point of your experiences with the Vatican and otherwise, what we've seen happening as this Soros agenda has been playing out in Europe that should be of concern to us here.
It should be. I mean, we know what the massive spike in rapes against women in Sweden, the chaos in France, the no-go zones, the imposition of Sharia law in Christian Europe. Frank, my own experience in the 1990s with Sharia law, when I was handling international child abduction cases of Muslim men who had married American women who had American-born children. Those children were abducted to Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Egypt, and there was no treaty in place. Those countries refused to sign the Hague Treaty. And as a result, I had to deal with the reality of Sharia law as an American lawyer with international criminal warrants out for these abductors, which were not recognized under Sharia law. U.S. custody orders were not recognized under Sharia law. And these American-born children are in a dark hole, never to be seen again by their mothers.
Now, when you say American-born children, let's just put a fine point on it. These are American citizens. They're children, to be sure, but they're American citizens who are being moved without the permission of the mothers and to perhaps a very unhappy fate.
Yes. Well, in many of the cases, we found that the girls at age 10, 11, and 12 had been married off. So the time was clicking away, and we were terrified that if we didn't find them, they would have been married away. In fact, that's what happened. And, you know, I had one very interesting experience I want to share with your audience. A U.S. judge thought he would be very smart. The father had said he was going on a trip. The mother said to the judge, those children will never be brought back to the United States. The judge said, I'll bring in his imam, and he can swear that he will return with the children. The imam came in. The judge gave him a holy Bible to swear on, raised his right hand, and said, oh, yes, the children will come back. Well, of course, the children did not come back, and the judge had egg on his face because he found out that, of course, the holy Bible might as well been the newspaper as far as this imam was concerned. And in fact, lying to the infidel is part of, you know, Sharia law.
To advance the faith, to secure benefits for the faithful, you know, this is tikiyah, they call it.
This is the reality that we are facing already in the United States and is rampant over Europe. It is antithetical to the Catholic teachings, to constitutional law. You know, I don't know where the feminists are on this issue, because women have absolutely, and that was my experience, no rights under Sharia law.
Well, tragically, you're saying that I know, in a sort of Socratic way, where are they? Well, they are with the Islamists, or at least many of their putative leaders are. And you were just about to describe some of the implications for women as well as their offspring. Please continue that thought.
Yes. I mean, under divorce law in Sharia law, the man can say three times, I divorce you, I divorce you, I divorce you. She is divorced. She has no rights, no ability to see the children if he says she cannot see the children. And child marriage laws, the female genital mutilation, I mean, all these
the honor
issues.
Killings, the beatings, the whole nine yards. Yeah.
And our bishops in the United States are, to say nothing about, you know, the Catholic issues, the faith issues that will be under assault, our bishops are pushing this issue, which is a George Soros-funded issue around the world, especially now in the United States. And we cannot have an honest discussion about what exists under Sharia law, as I saw back in the 1990s. Back in the, you know, this was going on, and I was, you know, screaming from the rooftops, trying to encourage, you know, courts to understand the impact of Sharia law on these Muslim, non-Muslim marriages and taking children out of the country.
You know, one of the things that the Center for Security Policy has been very active on for some time is helping support those around the country. At state legislative levels, who are seeking to ensure that their courts of that state in question did not, in fact, wind up, you know, adopting or imposing Sharia law prescriptions in their judiciary. Elizabeth Yore, what you've essentially been describing is a practice that kind of is end running those courts, or in some cases, the judge in question is, in the spirit of comity, simply acceding to the use of Sharia. Is that right?
And the comity doesn't work both ways.
That's
it only
for sure.
Works one way. And, you know, a custody decree in the United States is recognized in a court in Italy or in England, but it certainly is not recognized at all in a court in Saudi Arabia or
Sharia
Egypt.
Sharia courts
or
abroad. Elizabeth, we have to pause for one more moment. We will be right back with more with Elizabeth Yore, and we'll talk a little bit about what we can do to help these children and to help, for that matter, Western civilization in the struggle against George Soros, the open borders crowd, or Sharia supremacists that are exploiting their efforts. That and more straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back to the fourth installment of our special conversation with Elizabeth Yore, an advocate for children in both America and internationally, children who have been, in some cases, preyed upon by others, some of whom are now lost or certainly suffering great privation at the hands of exploiters here and abroad. Elizabeth is speaking to us from, among other platforms, Yore Children, YOREchildren.com, and you can find much of her work there and also in The Remnant, a terrific outlet for sort of traditional teachings of the Catholic Church. Let me ask you to, before we turn to some of the specific suggestions you would recommend be adopted by the Church, among others, but also the rest of us, as you're looking at this problem of refugees in our country, based in part on what we're seeing happening in Europe, the insinuation of Sharia into not just our courts, but into our schools, into our media, into our financial sector, into our government, to the extent that with your decades of experience here, how far gone are we in terms of submitting to this supremacist doctrine, do you think?
It's difficult to tell, Frank. I think all we have to do is look to Europe. That's the template, the chaos that is unfolding in Europe. It was that great Protestant pastor, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who said, "Silence in the face of evil is itself evil. God will not hold us guiltless. Not to speak is to speak. Not to act is to act." It is very easy for people to understand what's going on in Sharia law. All they have to do is pick up some monographs online at your center to understand the full impact. And, you know, quite frankly, this is a children's issue. If everybody's concerned about human trafficking now, the increase of refugees into our country is going to dramatically increase human trafficking. It is going to dramatically end up abusing children. Children will have far fewer rights under Sharia law than they do in the United States. The rights of children will exist no more. And so it's an urgent call to your listeners to, one, educate yourselves on this issue, and it doesn't take a lot just to educate, find out what's going on in your community, open your eyes, be vigilant, organize, and continue to talk to your friends, neighbors, and family. You know, we've all been silenced by name calling. I mean, it's just, and that's quite frankly what's happening. We're all called names instead of having a serious discussion about the impact of Sharia law on this magnificent constitutional that we have in the United States.
You know, as you're talking about that, I just I'm conjuring in my mind the role that is being played by the hard left in this country. We talked about the feminists being AWOL in this fight, at best, at worst, working for the other side. But more generally, this technique of silencing those of us who are critical of what's afoot here and trying in so doing to basically give those trying to force this program of Sharia on the rest of us a free ride is partly an agenda for the left, isn't it? It's not just the Sharia blasphemy claims. It's the whole argument that you mustn't offend or otherwise defame those of this religious practice. And again, I think what's so important about your legal training and background, Elizabeth, is the understanding you have that what we're really dealing with here is not a constitutionally protected religion. It is a totalitarian ideology, isn't it?
It is. It is. And I have firsthand experience in the courts with well-meaning, well-intentioned, naive, ignorant judges who sent children never to see their homeland again. That's going to be repeated again and again and again. It's going to be imposed in far more draconian ways. And people have to wake up and start talking and start speaking up and stop being fearful and educate themselves on Sharia law. It's a reality. Learn about what's going on in Europe.
Elizabeth, you are in our closing minutes. Just to drill down on one piece of this specifically, as a practicing and devout Catholic, what should Catholics do at a moment when, as you say, thousands of parishes across the country are being used as essentially battering rams to impose sort of an open borders approach here, a willful blindness, if you will, towards Sharia, and therefore, in a sense, a complicity with some of the worst of what you're describing here?
Absolutely. It is time for Catholics to start speaking up to their pastors, to their bishops, stop giving money to the collection plate, start handing material from the center to their pastors, demanding that there be discussion groups about this issue, and stop being so afraid to talk turkey to your bishops and your, they need to hear from you, and they will back down if the, and I believe, Frank, in my heart as a Catholic, I believe this is a movement that is building in the grassroots, and Catholics need to speak to their pastors and educate their pastors and tell their pastors and tell their bishops that they have their back. If they, you know, that they should not be pushing this radical Soros refugee resettlement agenda, which is being pushed by Francis.
Two things. One, the principle of papal infallibility, and how do they deal with that? And second of all, the church is making vast amounts of money off of one aspect or another of this this enterprise, particularly the refugee resettlement business. Talk about those two things,
issue.
If you would.
The U.S. Council of Catholic Bishops, Conference of Catholic Bishops, made $91 million in federal contracts as a contractor of the Obama administration resettling refugees. So this is about money. Let's be clear about that. Secondly, Catholics can no longer be silenced by the hierarchy. Didn't we learn our lesson during the clergy abuse scandal? Didn't we learn that we needed to speak up and demand justice for children, and that we shouldn't be afraid to speak up to Father when we didn't like certain things going on? It is time to use our voice. And so, and finally, I would say, Pope Francis, this is not infallible teaching. This is not about the magisterium. This is about Pope Francis's personal, radical Jesuit agenda that is being carried out at the behest of George Soros in the UN. I'm not sure why or how we got in this mess. I hope to find out someday, but that is it, plain and simple. And this is a financially attractive project that the bishops are pushing. There's a lot of money in this.
Yeah. Elizabeth, your exposing of these connections and motivations and their implications is tremendously appreciated. Again, I want to commend everybody. YourChildren.com, Y-O-R-E, children.com, and your work, of course, at The Remnant and elsewhere, and this effort to adopt corrective actions from the ground roots, grassroots up, is so desperately needed and much valued. Thank you, Elizabeth. I appreciate your time with us today and the work you're doing. Come back to us again very soon. I hope the rest of you will come back to us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.